Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Mike Wangpa. Today we're going to be discussing an important topic, the ceding of the Chago Island to Mauritius by the United Kingdom. I'm joined by a very special guest, Dr. Peter Harris. Peter is an associate professor at Colorado State University. He has written extensively on the Chago Island issue and has research interests in U.S. foreign policy, security studies, the Indo-Pacific, and overseas military bases, among many other interests. Peter, I'm very pleased to have you join me today, and I look forward to a very fruitful conversation with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so in recent times, we've seen the United Kingdom has ceded what has been considered its last colony to Mauritius, the Chagos Island. I wanted to start from the point of, for those who don't know what this is, where is the Chagos Island? What is it all about? Let's start from the beginning.
There's about 60 really small, tiny islands in the middle of the Indian Ocean called the Chagos Islands. They're about halfway between Africa and Southeast Asia, right there in the middle. Mm-hmm. And in 1965, the UK took those islands and separated them from the colony of Mauritius. They'd been part of this colony of Mauritius for the past several hundred years. And the UK separated those islands and they created a new colony. It was actually the last colony ever created by the British Empire. They called it the British Indian Ocean Territory, and they governed it from 1965 to the present day for one reason, so they could host a U.S. airbase or U.S. naval base on the largest of those islands, which is called Diego Garcia. And before they built that base between 1965 and 1973, Britain expelled all of the indigenous islanders that lived there. It was about 1,500 or so indigenous Chagos Islanders. They were expelled. They were kicked off the islands so that the UK could have this air base, or naval base, for its ally, the United States. And ever since, the Chagos Islanders have wanted to go back, and Mauritius has wanted to reclaim the islands. It says that they belong to Mauritius's sovereign territory. And the UK and the US have always said no up until now. Now there's been an agreement to return the islands to Mauritius, and Mauritius has undertaken to allow the islands to be resettled by the Chagos Islanders.
We'll come back to some of the historical roots, but what are the chain of events that has motivated or that has shifted that resistance to now returning? What are the chain of events? What are the immediate motivations or immediate spark that has led the United Kingdom to soften a stance to return the island to Mauritius?
So, as you say, for decades, the UK was always dead against returning the islands. It did always say that it would do it at some point. Ever since the beginning, ever since 1965, the UK has said, we will return these islands to Mauritius when they're no longer needed for defense and security purposes. So that's why, you know, some people like me, we say we shouldn't say that we're ceding the islands. We're not really, we're returning them. We always said we wouldn't do that. Mm. But the Britain said no, because the security interests of the United States are paramount and they don't want the islands to be resettled. But the things changed over the past few years when the International Court of Justice gave an advisory opinion that Britain's occupation of the islands was illegal. It was unlawful. And then the United Nations General Assembly followed up 116 governments versus just six voted that the United Kingdom was breaking the law and needed to exit the Chagos Islands. And then I think the turning point was in February 2022, Mauritius sent a boat to the Chagos Islands with Chagosians on it, with diplomats on it, with journalists on it. And they told the UK in advance, we're going to the Chagos Islands and we're going to raise a flag when we get there. And did nothing to stop that voyage from taking place. And I think the reason Britain did not stop Mauritius from visiting the islands is because Britain knew it couldn't stop them lawfully. They would have to defend that in a court of law. If you detain the Mauritian ambassador to the United Nations on the high seas, you have to defend that in a court of law. Yeah. They didn't think they could, because they knew that their presence on the Chagos Islands was unlawful, it was illegal, they couldn't stop it. So from the perspective of Washington and American decision makers, that's it. The game's over. If you can't stop people from coming to these islands, unauthorized visits, we got to fix this. You know, this is not a sustainable situation.
Mm. I think this also brings us to how how that is compatible or incompatible, the actions of the United States and the United Kingdom is incompatible with the core principle of liberal democracy, where you talk about, you know, all of these freedoms. And then how have they been able to defend all of this against the core human rights? And then again, we're looking at them. And then again, I want to mention even the United States, because the United States never, when you compare to Europe and look at Europe's history of colonization, the United States would say they didn't have all of that. But how does that
Sorry, the audio's gone for me. Sorry, I can't hear you, Michael.
Okay, I was talking about the compatibility of the actions of the UK and the US with liberal principles of freedom, of human rights. How is that? Because that looks like an obvious disconnection there. Are they able to get away with that?
Well, I think you're right. I mean, the first thing to say is they've probably stopped getting away with it. And they realized that, right? I mean, for a long time, they thought they could kind of balance this hypocrisy. I mean, it's obviously a gross abuse of human rights to expel the islanders from their homes. And the UK apologized for that and said, what a great injustice that was, but we're not going to let them go back. It's obviously an injustice to separate these islands from Mauritius in defiance of international law, but they just pretended they weren't breaking the law, and they said, "Well, we just don't believe that is actually the case, and we think that our administration of the islands is completely lawful." But it just became unsustainable for them. You know, in 2019, when the General Assembly voted on this, only four countries voted with the UK and the United States. One of them, the Maldives, changed its mind afterwards. So that's just three: Hungary, Israel, and Australia. Russia got more countries to back its invasion of Ukraine than backed Britain and America on the Chagos Islands. So I think they just realized that we can choose, right? We can choose to be in alignment with this free and open Indo-Pacific, the liberal rules-based order, or we can be viewed as being on the outside of it and complete hypocrites, and they've decided to bring themselves into alignment way too late. And I think the damage has probably been done to the reputation as law-abiding nations, but eventually they realized that this was just not sustainable.
Speaking about that, we've seen you mentioned about expelling people and then leaving people. In the UK, for instance, like you've always said, they've always maintained that they were going to return it. I think the current agreement with Mauritius excludes people that have been expelled before. Can you explain the current agreement? Because there seems to be the Chagosian seems to not agree with that. They show that it excluded from the process of this meeting. But what's that? How can you explain that situation?
Yeah, so there's Chagosians, there's several thousand Chagosians spread across Mauritius, the Seychelles, the UK, and elsewhere. Mm. And they're divided into groups. It's a big, big community with divergent interests, different identities, and different ideas about what should happen to the islands. Mm. The biggest group, the Chagos Refugee Group, the CRG, it supports the agreement. It kind of welcomes the agreement because the agreement says that Mauritius will be allowed to resettle what we call the outer Chagos Islands. So that's all of the Chagos Islands except for Diego Garcia. So they say, okay, this is good. We've campaigned for 50 years or more to return to the islands, and now we can at least return to some of them. That's a win. It's kind of a big victory for us. We get the right of return restored. There are other groups, one based in the UK called Chagossian Voices, that is not happy with the deal because they think, one, Mauritius might renege on that agreement and not allow resettlement, or they just don't want to resettle the islands under Mauritian sovereignty because they don't feel Mauritius. They don't feel like they're Mauritians. They feel British or Chagossian, and they want to resettle under British administration and British sovereignty. So there's a divide in the community about whether or not the agreement, which allows a partial right of return, is a good agreement. My opinion is that some right of return is better than no right of return. And the British government has said time and time again, Labour and Conservatives, Labour and Governments First and the Conservatives most recently have said, we'll never allow the Chagossians to resettle the islands. They've conducted studies into that. They've said no. Just both parties is dead against Chagossians resettling the islands. So my view is there's no way that will ever happen under UK administration. So doing this under Mauritian leadership is probably the only possible avenue for a resettlement to take place. But I acknowledge there are Chagossians out there in the Seychelles and the UK especially who they just don't trust Mauritius, they don't believe Mauritius, and they don't think this will happen.
You mentioned Maldives as one of the countries that are supported in the UK-US. And there's been that dynamics where Maldives is also laying claim to making some claims in respect of if Mauritius is in. I think they also have some resistance to this deal. Am I correct with that? I don't know. I've read it somewhere.
Did you ask about Modi in India? Is that what you said?
No. Maldives. You mentioned
Maldives. Sorry.
Yeah. You mentioned that one of the four countries that supported the UK US in the court was Maldives. Well, are there somewhere that they also have their own kind of like claims? And can you explain that?
There was a claim that the Maldives government had on some of the northern Chagos Islands. There's one called Peros Panos. And the Maldives claimed this. And if they got this little tiny island, part of the Chagos, it would open up a whole massive area of the ocean that would belong to Maldives for fishing and other stuff. But they dropped that claim a few years ago because they sent it to a binding arbitration under the the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea. They had a tribunal that listened to Mauritius and they listened to the Maldives, and they said, no, the Maldives doesn't really have a claim. This is all Mauritian sovereign territory. So they dropped the claim. There's still some people in the Maldives, opposition figures, who refuse to drop it, and they say that the Chagos group is part of not just this one island, but the whole group is part of the Maldives. And there's a small number of people in Maldives who say that, but there's nobody else in the world, no other world government, no institution, no court has ever sided with Mauritius on that point. With the Maldives on that point. The claim doesn't seem to have much of a basis in international law.
So let's put this within the framework of what is going on in other parts of Africa. So you've seen in the Sahel, you've seen you see the US military base there. You know, you've seen this anti-Western sentiment that is going on in that region. We've seen the military bases in Nigeria, US military bases, they have been sacked. We've seen in other places where they've been sacked as well. And then if you're looking at the Diego Gashara base and you know how the defense of that, people have been saying these military bases militarizes the conflict and creates has other kind of impact, you know, to forcing people to, you talk about the forced expulsion from the Chagos Islands, and then it comes back to that incompatibility liberal principles, where on one hand the European countries are concerned about mass migration, illegal migration, and you could say, oh, but you're expelling people from their land, and you know, setting up military bases that are creating for that. How do you see all of this in terms of military bases?
Yeah, I mean, international politics is a horrible business. It's a really horrible business. I mean, the base on Diego Garcia is very important to the US military. They use it to do all kinds of missions, naval and air missions in Africa, in the Middle East, and you can go as far afield as the South China Sea from this base. But the cost of that base is high. It ruined the Chagossians' lives. They were expelled from the homes in brutal, horrible, and illegal circumstances, never been allowed to return. The environmental destruction has been severe. People talk about the Chagos Islands as a pristine natural environment. Well, Diego Garcia is not. I mean, it's like they've got a runway big enough to land a space shuttle. It's not a pristine environment. I mean, it's being built upon. It's heavily built. African nations have declared themselves a nuclear-free zone, but there may be nuclear weapons stored in Diego Garcia. We don't know. So how is that going to be managed? Diego Garcia was alleged to be the site of a CIA black site where maybe torture was taking place and detention without trial. So there's a lot of human rights abuse issues. There's a lot of environmental degradation issues. And there's the sovereignty issue of violating Mauritian sovereignty. All of that is other people, right, have had to pay the cost so that the United States can have this base on Diego Garcia. And for the Pentagon, they want that base. They feel like they benefit enormously from having that presence in the Indian Ocean. But the cost of insecurity has been shifted onto these other populations. And it's pretty bad. And to be totally honest with you, I think that's one of the reasons the US and the UK have been so reluctant to return these islands to Mauritius, because they're scared that Mauritius won't be a reliable landlord going forward. They're scared that Mauritius will do what the Philippines did in the early 1990s and telling the Americans to leave. We don't want American air bases or American naval bases on our territory. You should leave. And they know that Britain will never say that, but they're worried that this African nation, Mauritius, they may say that one day. I don't think that's true, but that's a fear that they've had.
If I look at that, another fear or another thing, which is not necessarily there. Like if you look at Djibouti, for instance, there's another small place where you have several military bases, and you have the Chinese base and the military base. And then there's also fear of Chinese military bases expansion in Africa. How does this benefit the Chinese? Also look at the issue with Taiwan and all of that. How does this benefit them in a way?
I don't think this benefits China at all. I mean, there's a lot of people in the media and the press in the UK who are talking about China, 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 as if this deal is all about China. I think it's overblown. I don't think there's a role for China here at all. Djibouti is kind of a special case. They host several nations, right? The UK is going to base there, the US, France, and China have all got these bases in Djibouti. We'll have to see the text of this agreement, but I think it's pretty likely that the treaty between Britain and Mauritius is going to have some kind of guardrails against that. They'll kind of prohibit Mauritius from hosting other bases from China. But even if they wanted to, these other islands, they're too small. They're little specks. Only Diego Garcia can have like a true base. It's got a deep lagoon that you can sail big ships into. And it's big enough that you can have a runway on it. None of the other Chagos Islands come close to that. There's just no way you could have a base on those. And anyway, Mauritius wouldn't want to. It's one of the few African nations, just a handful, that are not part of China's Belt and Road Initiative. It's not a Chinese ally. It's not close to China. There's no sign of military or strategic or political closeness to China whatsoever. It's kind of a myth. It's just been manufactured by people who want to say that Mauritius is somehow some secretive, shadowy ally of China. It's just not. I mean, Mauritius is an ally of the UK, of the US, of India, close relations with France. It's really part of this kind of Western alliance, really. It's a member of the Commonwealth. So I don't see China benefiting from this at all. What I do see is if the UK and the US continue to act like imperialists and colonialists and refuse to abide by international law, I can see that benefit in China. I can see African nations, including Mauritius, starting to conclude, you know what, you guys are hypocrites. You don't follow the rules. You ask us to follow the rules, but you don't. Maybe, you know, China's not so bad after all. So I think refusing to return these islands to Mauritius could help China. But returning them, I don't think so.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. I've read somewhere where there's been a court case. There was a BBC investigation where there's a court case. I think Sri Lankan Tamil Tigers in the Chagos Island. Can you speak on that?
Yeah, I'll say I'm not an expert on this issue, so I might get some of the details wrong, but boats of asylum seekers and refugees were picked up in the waters of the Chagos Islands, escaping Sri Lanka predominantly, and they were been held on Diego Garcia for years now, and the conditions in that camp are really bad. They're terrible. Because the Americans won't let them host the refugees on their base. They won't make the base open to these refugees and asylum seekers. So they've built a temporary base, a temporary camp, tents, basically. Hundreds of people living in these tents for several years. And there's been some pretty awful stories that have come out of there of sexual abuse, sexual assault, children growing up in really awful conditions. Psychological problems, mental health problems, attempted suicides. It's really bad. And to the credit, I think the British officials, they realize that this is not sustainable and it's not humane. And we shouldn't be hosting refugees and asylum seekers on this island. We should move them somewhere that's more appropriate, where we can give care to them and process their case. But this weird legal setup, or I should say illegal setup, that they've created in the Chagos Islands has created all kinds of barriers and stumbling blocks to doing the right thing. Ordinarily, if this was really British sovereign territory, you could just move them to the UK, right? But it's not really British sovereign territory, and there's just all these kind of weird hurdles and hiccups and problems that the authorities have to deal with, and the the people who lose out from that are these the most vulnerable people in the world, right? Refugees and asylum seekers who need help, and they're being kept in these camps. So the I just saw you in the headlines the past few days, the government has agreed to move them now to another overseas territory, St. Helena, in the Atlantic Ocean, where I think the housing will be better and the care will be better. But that's also not, it's not a very good solution.
What do you, so let's talk about, you mentioned St. Helena now. So let's talk about all of these overseas territory. And you're talking about in the 21st century. We looked at what happened in the Falkland Islands. What is the legality of this overseas territory? Because they did, I was watching, this might not be related, but somehow it was King Charles and Queen Camilla visiting Australia, and one indigenous MP heckled them and like, oh, you're not my kingdom, and stuff like that. In the 21st century, and you know, look back again to a couple of years with the Black Lives Matter and you know the toppling of should we be having the conversation with these historical narratives that still continue? And you know, maybe there should be a point where people are having conversation about the past. Because look at the past is being mixed with the present and the future. It's like you know, the colonial past, imperialist past, and how it continues. It seems to be like a cycle. What do you think the future is? Why should it be addressed?
I think the Chagos Islands was a special case in the sense that the UK had always said they would be returned to Mauritius. It never said it would keep them forever. And that's different. That's never really happened before. Even Hong Kong, you know, half of Hong Kong, the lease expired in 1997, but the other half, the UK could have kept hold of it forever if it really wanted to put up a fight. Yeah. So Chagos Islands is kind of a special case where we'd always said we would return them. And it was found in these court cases and advisory opinion of the ICJ that it was just illegal. We should give them up right now. The other overseas territories, I think they're technically lawful. You know, I think they're kind of, they're in line with international law, but that doesn't mean that they're just. That doesn't mean that they should exist. I think the sovereign air bases on Cyprus, for example, I think they should be returned to Cyprus. I mean, why does the UK have air bases in Cyprus? It doesn't make much sense to me. I think it gets a little complicated in terms of competing demands of international law when you factor in the right of self-determination, though. If people say that the Falkland should belong to Argentina, well, what about the rights of the Falkland Islanders who don't want to be part of Argentina? They've got a right to self-determination and they want to be part of the British overseas territories. And, I'm in favor of the right of self-determination. So if people in Gibraltar, people in the Falkland Islands, the people of Montserrat, the people of Pitcairn, they want to be part of British overseas territories. I think the right of self-determination is an important one. The problem with the Chagos Islands was the right of self-determination was violated at the very beginning when those people were expelled. They didn't choose that. They were expelled from their islands. So there was no permanent population then to choose to remain part of the UK. But I do think as a larger point, the conversation on the Chagos is getting really spoiled and confused by people in the UK, especially the right-wing media, who are making this about kind of empire and imperialism as if those are good things, right? They kind of, we're giving up a colony. This is terrible. The people who are complaining that the sun will now set on the British Empire, and they think that's a bad thing. they think it would be a good thing if the sun never set on the British Empire. And that mentality... You know, I grew up in the UK. I've lived the first 25 years of my life in England and Scotland. I never thought the British Empire was a good thing. I never thought that the sun should never set on the British Empire. That seems to be a new resurgent set of beliefs, maybe after Brexit. I don't know, but something going on that people now think that it's a good thing to hold on to territory that doesn't belong to you. And I can't support that. I think the UK needs to be in alignment with international law. It needs to be respected on the world stage. It needs to align itself with the same rules that it asks other people to follow.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And colonialism and imperialism belong in the past, and the we should apologize for those things, not try and perpetuate them.
Yeah, I was going to ask that, but you've answered it. I was going to say, what is the logic, what is the rationale behind those that see this as a mistake? And I think you answered it. But so they've also talked about national, you know, it's undermined the UK's national security. In what way does it undermine UK's national security?
Yeah, the UK's national security is not affected at all by what happens in the Chagos Islands. The base on Diego Garcia is an American base. It's American ships, American planes, American troops. There used to be some pictures on the internet a few years ago of British Marines doing the recycling, like taking out the trash, like emptying the garbage bin. Like, it's a token. It's an American base. It's an American enterprise. The UK does have some kind of military activity in the Indian Ocean, but it's based out, it's up in the Persian Gulf. It's nothing to do with Diego Garcia. This is an American base, and America has got big security interests there. But this agreement, it deals with those. Like, it takes those into account. The UK is not, it's not at stake. So you'll read these things in the Telegraph or the Times or some other newspaper, the Express and the Mail. In the UK, where they say we're giving up this important airbase. It's not Britain's airbase. It's just not. They drive on the right hand side of the road. There's like a McDonald's. Like, this is an American base. You know, it's not. It's not a UK base.
Okay, but before I come back to something, to the last question, let me ask this. So you mentioned your support for right to self determination, but in the African context, looking at the way African states are a product of, you know, colonial, at least my creation of the colonial government. But we've not seen a lot of interstate wars. We've seen a few of, you know, fight for secession within the country. I think, again, one case that comes to mind is two cases, basically. There's the Somaliland, in Somalia, and then there is the Western Sahara, and you see, you know, the contest between Algeria, Morocco, and I think Mauritius also had a claim on the Western Sahara before it gave up on this one. But what I'm saying is, we've seen less of countries in Africa challenging that arbitrary creation of states. And just, you know, accepting, you know, this colonial kind of like demarcation. But within states, you're seeing pockets, you know, rise for self-determination. I don't know if this in itself could be a reason why the UK and US had got away so long with occupying the Chagos Islands. Because there might be no appetite for, you know, challenging these things in the continent. I don't know if you agree with this.
Well, I think it's true that Africa, as a continent, as a kind of a regional order, the borders of states have been fixed since the colonial era. There's been an agreement among African governments that borders won't change except with consent. So it's true, you don't really see wars of conquest in Africa. I mean, it's not like Russia's invasion of Ukraine where they're trying to take land. It doesn't really happen in the African context. That's a good point. I never really kind of thought of that before, but it's one way in which Africa can really truly upholds these international rules of sovereignty, territorial integrity, and non-intervention. I'm sure there's some problems with adherence to international law in Africa, but when it comes to states' borders and territorial integrity, that's not really one of them. I think the AU, the African Union, has been pretty good at supporting Mauritius on the Chagos issue. They've issued these statements and declarations to really endorse the Mauritian position. But certainly there's never been any appetite for kind of using force or using some kind of extra legal means to take those islands back for Mauritius. I think what Mauritius and its African partners have done is exemplary, really. They've used international law and international courts, forums like the United Nations General Assembly, to just to win by the rules, which is really remarkable. I mean, you take a small country like Mauritius, which is a very small population, tiny island, and then you got big powers like the United States of America. Mauritius won, right? They took them to the African Union. They took it to the UN General Assembly. They got the International Court of Justice, the International Tribunal and the Law of the Sea. Like, they used the rules. They used the institutions. And they were on the right side of that argument, and they won. So in a way, it's a real vindication of this rules-based order that people think, it's just words. It doesn't really exist. Well, just ask Mauritius, because they've won a pretty big victory.
Brilliant, brilliant. Yeah, let's come to, you're coming to the end of this now, but I want to talk about AFRICOM. I'm talking about the how people view military bases. But I think one of the things with the Russia-Ukraine war and the logic behind Putin stuff is, NATO's expansion, coming towards it. And then you're looking at in Africa as well, there's been, I know for sure that there is Nigeria kicks against military bases in Nigeria, or they see it as a threat to their sovereignty. And I know after doing Bush, Africa really kicked against having AFRICOM or having a military base in these places. And they were calling, looking at what's going on in Diego Garcia, how the defense, like part of that agreement has kept the Diego Garcia base. So I'm looking in the future, what do you see? How do you see the future of military bases, foreign military bases? Because that's also what's happening in the Sahel. People are seeing it as an imperialist. That argument of fighting against terrorism is not holding water.
Yeah. I would say two things. The one is that bases have got to exist with the consent of the local people, local governments. And Mauritius has consented. It's given a 99-year consent to a U.S. base on Diego Garcia. If that consent is ever withdrawn, I think the base should go. I think you can only have a military base on a foreign country if the host country gives its consent. That's just a basic principle of sovereignty, that you should not have military bases overseas without the consent of the people who are hosting the base. The second principle, though, is eventually the United States probably wants to wind down the number of bases that it has overseas. It's not sustainable. It's not good for international security. It's not good for U.S. national security. And it's probably not good for the host countries themselves to have so many American bases all around the world, something like 800 American bases in dozens of countries. If there were problems with terrorism, with insurgencies, with political instability somewhere in the world, I think empowering local partners to deal with those problems is the future. That's the way forward. This strategy of having American bases dotted around the world conducting counterterrorism and counterinsurgency, it can't go on forever. It's not a good strategy. It's not good for anyone. And as you rightly noted, it's deeply unpopular in many places. It's deeply unpopular. It's viewed as colonialism. It's viewed as imperialism. And it's viewed as inviting insecurity, that if you put a military base there, it will kind of cause insecurity rather than solve it. So, those are the two principles I would say. No bases without consent of the local people. But two, over time, the goal must be to draw down this overseas military presence and empower local partners to create their own security.
Brilliant. I agree. I can agree. I agree 100%. Now, let me come to the last question. What is the future of this agreement? Do you see it holding still? Do you see the in the end of it? What do you see, like, from those in the right side of, when I say right, I mean the conservative in the UK, from the US perspective, from the Chagosian perspective, from Mauritius perspective, how do you see all of these differences being resolved? Do you see that this deal holding still?
Yeah, I think they must have been pretty sure that they had a deal that would go through, because the UK announced it, the Mauritius announced it, and they got the Americans, like President Biden, to endorse it. So it would be wild if it fell apart now. It's still possible. I mean, it's still possible that the wording of the treaty could trip them up. I mean, this still has to go through the UK Parliament as well. The Foreign Secretary, David Lammy, said that a bill will be brought forward that would have to pass Parliament. So there's still some barriers to be overcome, but I think they will be overcome. I think, you know, when you have three governments that all endorse this, and they've worked very hard to get this agreement, and they probably want to do it before... Ideally, they would start this before the U.S. election is decided. I think it will go through. Okay. I've described this elsewhere as a win-win-win-win, because the U.S. got what it wanted, which is a permanent military base. The Britain got what it wanted, which is to bring itself into alignment with international law. Mauritius got its territory back, and the Chagossians got a right to return. So it's a win-win-win-win. There's some people who just don't see it that way, and we've got to acknowledge that. There's the Chagossian voices in the UK, some Chagossians in the Seychelles. They don't view this as a win. They view it as a betrayal. And my hope is that when the agreement has been signed and settled and the deal is done, that Britain and Mauritius and the US will make every effort possible to reassure those people that they can be compensated for the loss of their homeland, that they can be given a right to return and treated as equals by Mauritius in their own land. So right now, not everyone does view this as a triumph, and I hope that the governments involved will bring those people along and reassure them that this really is a good deal for them.
Brilliant. I hope so too. I join your optimism. Thank you very much, Peter. It's been an amazing time. And sorry, it's very early where you are right now.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And thanks very much. Really appreciate
it. Thanks. I really appreciate the invitation. It's nice to talk to you. So thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you, Peter.
Thanks.
Thank you for tuning in today to an interesting episode on the Chagos Island. Join me as usual to thank our guest, Dr. Peter Harris, who is working up very early from Colorado. I think it's about 5 a.m. in Colorado to join us today to share his insights on this and developing your subject. Pray join me again next week for more interesting and exciting episodes. For now, thank you.